of April 27th to order. Members present are Senator Stedman, Senator Elton, and myself, Senator Wagner, and Senator Dyson. First order of business is House Bill 57, sale of state lands to adjacent landowners. And Terry, if you're ready, would you like to speak to the bill?
Yes, sir. Terry Harvey, Representative Wyrock's office. We spent a lot of time in the legislature as liaisons between our constituents and state government, and we do everything we can for them. In fact, some of us, that's primarily what we do. From time to time, we get unique situations where the statutes will not allow us to not allow a constituent to take care of a specialized situation, and that's why we're here for you today to introduce a modification to some language that exists that would allow a person who finds themselves, a property owner would find themselves with a small parcel, and when I say small, 20 acres or less, within their property surrounding that state parcel entirely. We're looking for some language, this language here, to allow the state to negotiate a fair market price to that particular owner. And we have Mr. Milius from the Department of Natural Resources here to give us specifics on what the language would do, why we need it, and what it will do. We know there are situations around the state where this exists. We example we bring to you today with this bill is Mr. Schnabel in Haines, a gentleman who's been in that area for many years and has some land there which he has worked diligently in a small mining operation for years. He finds himself in a situation where his property completely surrounds a small existing state mining claim, and he wishes to negotiate with the state the purchase of that property to bring all his property under his ownership. There is no access to that property unless you go through that state-owned property, and that's why we're here. And Mr. Milius is with us on the line to explain the technical aspects of the language here. Mr. Schnabel is here to explain his own personal situation. We've worked with DNR to craft this language. We also worked with the Department of Fish and Game. Ms. Gilbertson is here today, if need be, to address the best interest findings that we included in the language. Just added scrutiny for the state of Alaska to be absolutely certain before they enter into a negotiation with the landowner that access issues would be taken care of, that we'd all be served well in the event that something like this type of sale would go forward. So with that, if there are any questions, I'd be glad to answer.
Are there any questions of sponsor staff? Senator Dyson.
Why doesn't this have a positive fiscal note?
We've not been able to find through DNR that there are any additional expenses that would be added to a negotiated sale that would already exist. Through the chair, sir.
Either I misspoke or you weren't listening.
I probably the latter, sir.
If you're going to sell it, you're going to get money and have a positive fiscal.
Okay. Well, there would in that event, not knowing what that positive through the chair, sir, not knowing what that exact amount would be, the fiscal note is reflected is zero, as in to indicate there would be no charges to the state. And Mr. Milius can answer that question, I believe.
Thank you.
Okay, further questions? Senator Stedman.
Just, Mr. Chairman, if we could get just a little brief explanation on how this would work if the state has isolated parcels along coastal Alaska, like in southeast Alaska, for example, or central Alaska on the coast, if there happens to be a 20 or less acre surrounded by the Tongass and then fronting the beach, is that excluded or included? Or
we worked with the Department of Fish and Game, and if you'd allow, could we bring Ms. Gilbertson up to help address that issue? Mr. Chairman.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Sarah Gilbertson. I'm Special Assistant to the Commissioner at Fish and Game. And through the chair, Senator Stedman, we had similar concerns. A previous version of this bill had the new language as number 11 down below, and we asked Representative Wyrock to move that language up under 7B so that there would be a best interest finding. And our primary concern was public access to land and water, and so we wanted to make sure that before the state and DNR in particular looks at a parcel of land for sale, that they make sure that the public has access to the land and water and that there is a best interest finding. So, and Dick Miles is on the phone from DNR, I believe, but I don't think that that parcel would be considered completely surrounded by enclosed land, but Mr. Miles would know better.
In other words, what you're saying, to be eligible under this bill, it has to be a total inholding within other owned land. In other words, I think we all understand that.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that would be correct.
Because technically, I've been involved in this with the federal government through a friend of mine. Technically, if a piece of land is not totally surrounded, it can't be not defined as inholding. If it has an access across a state right of way or waterway.
So. We could present that to Mr. Miles, but yes, sir, I agree and believe that is correct.
Okay. Further questions of the bill sponsor, staff? Any questions of Ms. Culbertson?
Well, were we going to go to Mr. Miles?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll ask.
No other questions of the staff.
I'll ask a question of staff, but my guess is they might defer to Mr. Miles. Terry, as you were presenting the bill, you said a state mining claim, and I'm going to take this as an opportunity to learn something. Does a state have mining claims?
This mining claim, I believe, and Mr. Schnabel can give me the give us allow, through the chair, sir, allow us the particulars. This is a before statehood mining property that was territorial property that became state property.
So it was a mining claim that was relinquished to the territory.
I believe so, sir.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Senator Stedman,
I could add a little bit to that, Senator Elton. I think when these properties pre-statehood, and some of them are even in Southeast pre-creation of the Tongass, technically reside outside the Tongass, even though they're in the Tongass. But when the state has these properties and they sell them, they do not transfer the subsurface rights, only the surface rights. And then they add on, if it's at the waterfront, the 50-foot public access easement. Yeah. So there's no transfer of submerged lands or tide lands or subsurface rights.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
If there are no further questions, let's go to Dick Miles. To are you on there, Dick?
Yes, Senator Wagner.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Senator Wagner and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dick Miles. I'm the director of the DNR Division of Mining, Land, and Water. And I'll get to answer some of the questions after I first give a brief overview of the bill from our perspective. You may recall the committee earlier this year dealt with Senate Bill 55, which actually is similar in terms of the motivation behind the bill, which is that we've got a parcel of state land that we would like to sell, but under existing state laws, we can't really sell it. And in most instances, when we sell state land, we do it through a competitive open process where all Alaskans have an opportunity to purchase it. But we have statutes, which this is proposed to be amended to, which are referred to as preference right sales, which allows DNR to sell land exclusively to one person who has some sort of specific either existing improvements, existing interest in the land for some reason. And in this case, a parcel of land that is totally, a state land that's totally surrounded by privately owned land owned by one individual, so that this parcel of land is not particularly usable or accessible for somebody else, but it's very usable for this one individual. The specific situation, I think we've talked a little bit about it here, but it's a parcel of state land that's totally surrounded by land owned by Mr. Schnabel. At least that's the motivation for it, although this could apply to other parcels elsewhere in the state. The parcel currently would not qualify for any preference right because it's too big. We're allowed to sell lands that are remnants of, that are created like when we create a right-of-way or an easement or something that are unmanageable, but under that statute, it says that it has to be below the minimum lot size for the municipality. This parcel is larger than the minimum lot size in this area of the Haynes Borough. So we couldn't sell it under that statute as currently written. We can't sell it competitively because there is no legal access for the public to get to it to use the land. And so that's a problem because we don't like to sell land with no access. And like I said, the only access is through the privately owned land. And the parcel really has no value to the state or the public because the public can't really use it because they can't get to it. It's a parcel of land that does have mineral values, and I'll address that in a second here. But we think this is a good solution. We've been working with Representative Wyrock's office on crafting the bill. We think it could possibly apply in other situations, but we think there's adequate safeguards to make sure that we wouldn't sell land that was important for public access and so on. I know that's the concern that we heard, especially from fish and game folks. So that's my quick overview, and I'll quickly try to answer some of the questions I heard. Regarding Senator Dyson's question about the fiscal note, we actually have, if you notice on the revenue part of our fiscal note, it's actually indeterminate. And that is because we will get, the state recognizes we will get revenue from this, but we don't know what it is. It would be based on a fair market appraisal of the property. So there will be revenue, but didn't try to estimate that. I think Senator Stedman's question was largely answered about access or other parcels in Southeast. One of the provisions of the bill is they would have to be totally surrounded by privately owned land. So if somebody had a parcel that was totally surrounded by the Forest Service, it wouldn't qualify for this preference right. But where the state does have isolated parcels in Southeast like that, we have in the past sold them, although actually several of those were transferred to the university, so they actually acquired some of those old inholdings. And then in response to Senator Alvin's question, the state does have a lot of people stake mining claims, and on this particular parcel, I believe Mr. Schnabel does have a state mining claim on the parcel. The way the state actually acquired this parcel was that it was a federal mining claim, and under an act that the legislature passed in 1959, if people didn't register their property, the state foreclosed on those properties, and this property was foreclosed on back, I believe, in 1959, and so that's how the state acquired it, and it's just been sitting there since that time. So with that, I'll open it to any other additional questions I can answer.
Senator Stedman?
Maybe my memory's off a little bit. I thought there was a $35 or $50 annual filing fee that the miners had to do to the state, and if they didn't, then the state could go ahead and repossess some of the mining claims, or the mining claim, and the state had then, or through that mechanism, came into possession of numerous mining claims around the state as the miners failed to pay their, I want to say it's a $35 filing fee annually, but that was well in existence before 1950, was it not?
Senator Stedman, through the chair, that may actually have been a territorial law or something like that, but I do know that the state did acquire properties such as this through foreclosure under that law. That's long ago since repealed, so it's kind of before my time in terms of understanding the history of that, but I do know that is actually how we acquired this particular parcel. And you're right, there's all sorts of former federal mining claims that the state acquired through that legislation scattered around the state.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions, Mr. Miles? Senator Stebbin?
I was just curious, you briefly mentioned you didn't think or you couldn't recall off the top of your head that this would apply to any other parcels, but you thought it might. Has there been any inventory count on virtual inholdings at the state holds that so we could get a kind of feel for the scope of this, or is this truly a single property owner issue?
Senator Stebbin, through the chair, I'm sure there are other properties that are in the same situation, but we didn't try to conduct an inventory to ascertain where they are. But I would just, and they're probably some of these same kind of properties, the mining foreclosed properties in particular, where they're within a block of, a larger block of mining claims that were patented. So I would be willing to guess that there's probably others, it's probably not a, you know, a huge number statewide.
Okay, thank you.
Further questions? I'd like the record to reflect we've been joined by Senator Kukesh and Senator Seekins. With that, if there's no further questions of Mr. Milius, we'll go to John Schneibel.
My name is John Schneibel. I'm a resident of Haines, Alaska since 1939. You hear me well?
Yes, you're coming in fine.
I own 84 acres of land that completely surrounds 13 acres of state land. And I want to purchase this on a negotiated basis instead of an outcry auction, because in the past I've had to put up the cost of the survey and the title search and the advertising. And at the auction, anyone who wanted to bid against me has come in and privileged to do so without having to put up anything in front for the expense or the effort that I've made. And I'm in the process of developing this property into a tourist destination, basically as a wilderness experience and gold panning, and to have a conflicting activity of any kind within my facility would actually be harmful to its success. In other words, would interfere with those that want to have a wilderness experience. And I have invested probably, well, in excess of $1 million towards this development. And this bill would give me confidence that the future is secure. And that's just about all that I can tell you.
Are there any questions of Mr. Schneibel? Senator Seekin.
Mr. Schneibel, have you brought this situation to the attention of Representative Thomas?
Well, I don't hear you very well. You're not coming through. Yeah.
Have you brought this, have you brought this situation of your having that land inside yours to the attention of Representative Thomas?
This is Thomas's bill.
Well, yes, I have been trying for 20 years to resolve this, and it's been rather difficult because of a lot of problems. When the state first got the land, they classified it as forest land. Unfortunately, that put it in a no man's land, and I had to get that moved out of the forest land category into the public domain, and then I filed on it for a mining claim, and I worked all of the property to, for what values I could get out of it, and now I want to go in the tourist business.
Yeah, I was just wondering if maybe this is part of the reason that Mr. Thomas is a co-sponsor, is to address this particular issue that you have. Thank
well,
you.
I know you asked thank me a you. Question, but I don't quite know what it is.
I think I know the answer, so thank you very much, sir.
Okay, thank you for hearing me. Thank you.
Any further questions? Thank you very much for testifying today. With that, we'll, I don't think there's anybody here in Juneau that wishes to testify on HB 57, is there? Seeing none, we're going to close public testimony. What's the pleasure of the committee? Well, Senator Elton.
I'll jump into the silence. Mr. Chair, I'd move House Bill 57 with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Is there any objection? Seeing no objection, the bill will be moved. School off record for just a moment.
I just want to make a little announcement. I'm going to hold House Bill 415, and we're not going to hear that today. And we're changing the order. We're going to House Bill 419, and then we'll finish up with House Bill 307 today. So with that, we have Representative Coghill's staff here to present the bill. So please proceed.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Karen Litzberg, and I am staff to Representative John Coghill. And HB 419 is pretty much just a simple repeal of a bill, but when the Alaska legislature created the state underground storage tank program in order to assist those owners that were required to meet the deadlines set out in the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's underground storage tank program, the legislation provided a grant program, and with that they also put together a board of storage tank assistants, and that board was created to review and prioritize the grant applications. As EPA's deadline program began ended in 1999, the program began to phase out, and a storage tank revolving loan fund was established in 2002. The at this time, the loan fund has received no applications, no requests for loans, and with that, the Board of Storage Tank Assistance has had no really no use, no nothing to do. The grant program was phased out, and the fund program is not being used. So we are asking in HB 419 that we modify the end date for the board in order to be consistent with the end date for the termination of the loan program. The bill also lists out the statutes that relate to the board, the reporting, the regulations, the fees, the definitions, uses of the fund, and all the respective administrative codes. This will help with the orderly completion of the board's obligations and also take care of the renumbering instructions related to those statutes that are being repealed. In the audience is Larry Dietrich, who is the director for the Division of Spill Prevention and Response, and I think may have some comments to make or possibly answer questions if you have any, but we would appreciate your approval of this, and we'll get some statutes off that aren't no longer being used. And thank you very much.
Are there questions of the sponsor staff? Seeing none, thank you very much, Karen. We also have Breck Tostevin from the Alaska Department of Law here for our online for questions, and Larry Dietrich said he is here for questions. So if you have any questions, I can have them respond. Doesn't look to me like there's any questions. I'll just make a statement. I had the experience from down below here a few months ago when I took out an underground storage tank and piece of property that I had control of, so I know it's not totally over, but that was a private deal. Totally. What's the pleasure of the committee? I always love it when we take a law off the books.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Seekins.
I'd move House Bill 419 from committee with individual recommendations and the attached zero fiscal note.
Thank you. Is there any objection? Seeing none. Go off record for Next item before the committee today is House Bill 307, and we have the bill sponsor staff here. And with that, we'll turn it over to you, and please present the bill.
Thank you, Chairman Wagner. For the record, my name is Ben Mulligan, staff to Representative Bill Stoltz. House Bill 307 relating to the Knick River public use area was introduced at the end of session last year because of its importance to the area to give people ample opportunity to talk about the bill, discuss it, and participate in the public process that Representative Stoltz and Senator Huggins implemented during the summer. We had two public meetings, numerous talks individually with residents and concerned citizens, and numerous meetings with Department of Natural Resources, Division of Mining, Land, and Water. This legislation has come a long ways since that time. We've included a lot of language to address those concerns and the concerns that of DNR. Given the amount of public testimony, I'd like to just refer to questions and give them a chance to speak.
All right. Are there any questions of the bill sponsor? I've got one question. I didn't see anything, and I might have missed it when I went through the bill and the package. How many acres are we talking about?
Senator Wagner, 262,000 acres roughly.
Okay. A fair amount. Let's see if, all right, and it, my understanding is going to be a multiple use for about 30 different uses.
Senator Wagner, that is correct. The sponsor, along with Senator Huggins' idea, is to start with multiple use, maintaining that everyone should be able to responsibly use the area.
Okay. With that, we're going to go ahead and go right into the public testimony. And I'd like to limit testimony this afternoon. We've got about 25 people that want to testify. So I want to limit the testimony to about a minute and a half per person. And if you have written testimony, I'd like you to send that by fax to 465-4997. And so with that, we'll go to our first person to testify on the off net, Carrie Gray Wolf.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, Carrie.
My name is Terry Gray Wolf, a Knick River resident. Fact or fiction, will HB 307 perpetuate and enhance recreation and protect wildlife? Let's ask the following five questions. Number one, true or false? Allowing the use of weapons except in designated areas will enhance recreation. False, the area is plagued with excessive target shooting and bombing. These activities are a threat to public safety and destructive to the environment. Stricter regulations must be made for non-hunting activities. Two, one unarmed employee can control the unlawful activities. False. Crime is on the rise. In 2000, 840 crimes were reported and 1,240 in 2005. Even armed troopers have not been able to control unlawful activities. Three, the fiscal note provides adequate funding. False. For example, 3,000 people may recreate on the weekends. No sanitary facilities are available. This is a health hazard. HB 307 does not provide funding for sanitation. Four, Snake River Valley is a critical waterfowl migration route and nesting area. True, especially for the trumpeter swan. The enhancement and promotion of motorized use is contrary to the protection of critical nesting habitat. Trumpeters were nearly extinct. Only about 15,000 swans exist today. Alaska contains 80% of the world's trumpeter population. According to ADF&G, nesting swans may fail if high levels of human activity occur near nests. And five, the Knick River Valley is a rural area with few residents. False. A couple thousand homes surround the Knick River area. Residents are greatly affected by activities occurring in the valley. Moreover, the South Knick River Community Council opposes this legislation. The fact is, something isn't better. Always better than nothing. This bill caters to special interest groups. This bias will be at the expense of most other user groups, the residents, and the wildlife. Therefore, I oppose HB 307. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there questions? No questions. Next, we'll go to Scott Wolf.
Hello, I'm Scott Wolf. Can you hear me okay?
You bet. Go ahead, Scott.
I'm a South Kinnick River resident and wildlife biologist for over 20 years. I oppose HB 307, but would support instead the creation of a state recreation area or game refuge due to the high value of wildlife and fish habitat in such close proximity to Alaska's main population center. Jim Creek, the second largest sport fishery for silver salmon in south central Alaska, could be further at risk if even more use is perpetuated and enhanced. The section in the bill on management needs to specifically give the commissioner not only the responsibility, but also the funding and personnel for effective management to reach the objectives. The section on incompatible uses states that nothing prohibits the Department of Fish and Game from engaging in habitat enhancement and rehabilitation projects. But in fact, there are two potential limitations. One, money, and two, personnel, both of which are stretched within the Department of Fish and Game. As written, the section on weapon restrictions, or lack thereof, does not allow the commissioner to even address the widespread concerns of many local residents about excessive target shooting at all times of day and night and the use of explosives. To some extent, the commissioner should be able to restrict the type of weapons, regulate time of discharge, and the type of shot used in and adjacent to wetland areas. The federal government has required waterfowl hunters to use steel shot for many, many years.
You need to wrap it up, Scott.
Everyone else to be responsible and accountable for his or her actions. I wish to reiterate, I do not support the creation of a public use area for this critical wildlife region. Thank you.
Mr. Senator Elton.
Scott, thanks for your testimony. I understand that you would prefer a refuge, but given the climate and the time of the year, I'm not sure that happens. I'm going to ask a question. Do you prefer this over nothing?
Well, actually, I consider this nothing because it already is a public use area. And one, basically what it gives is one unarmed DNR person, which will basically, I mean, it's good luck finding someone to go in there without a gun when hundreds to thousands of people have guns. That's my big concern with the way this legislation is written.
Thanks, Scott.
Additional questions? Thank you for your testimony. Next is Britt Lively. Is Britt Lively on?
I was temporarily cut off here.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
I'm Britt Lively, longtime resident of Butte and co-founder of Butte Area Resident Civic Organization. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
I would like to disagree with Mr. Mulligan about extensive public testimony. We have had 9 minutes total so far. It will be 12 minutes for this meeting. At one public hearing in Butte and at the House Resources meeting. There was no extensive meeting with residents throughout the summer and throughout the winter. So I really think that it's not fair. The public has not had enough say. We had hoped that you would all read and view the packets that we have dropped by in Juneau, so that you would be more informed. You have also heard that it's only a handful of people who cause the damage. But even if it's a minority, 10% of 2,000 to 3,000 people unload or send with guns on a weekend, I just leave that to your imagination. The only way you could really understand why we are so insistent and persistent asking for stronger language in the bill regarding law enforcement, sanitation, and management of habitat with a state recreation area is you really would understand if you spent one weekend with us Memorial Day. I also will send you our testimony and some of the points I disagree with. They will not work. If I have any time left right now, I would like to make the point that we need immediate strong law enforcement, at least two full-time, fully empowered law enforcement personnel. The moose that are calving now and the swans that are nesting are in peril out there. The sanitary facilities are absolutely essential. We need to give the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources the responsibility to regulate target shooting throughout the public use area and to protect the public and the wildlife. You should see all the dead critters that you see out there, whether they're raptors, domestic animals, or just day before yesterday, there were the leftover moose right in the public parking area. We need to give commissioners of DNR, DEC, Fish and Game, and Public Safety the assurance and the funding to enable them to perform their primary statutory responsibilities on state lands in the Pinnock River Valley, which are developed, conserved, and enhanced natural resources for present and future Alaskans. HB 307 does not do it. If you want better, stronger language, which includes all users, motorized or non-motorized, please do consider the language of a Pinnock River Valley State Recreation Area. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions of Ms. Lively?
I just got one statement. You know, you mentioned Memorial Day weekend. I think that kind of defines any place in Alaska on Memorial Day weekend. My wife and I just happened to stay at home that weekend because of the same situation on the Kenai.
So, well, I appreciate every place. What you say. I said Memorial Day. You should have been here last weekend.
Yeah.
Where there was not even enough parking on the riverboat. The shooting never stopped. And we who live here, you know, we have to go somewhere else if we want to relax. Explosions, bombing, you name it. It's going on. And so it's every weekend. On Memorial weekend, it's like 3 days or 4 days rather than just the 2 days. Thank you.
Thank you very much for testifying. Next we'll go to Gregory Nelson.
Good afternoon. Am I on?
Yes, go ahead.
Good afternoon. This is Gregory Nelson. I'm a resident of Dubuque and a 55-year resident of Alaska. I grew up in a homestead where a large part of your day was spent occupied with just trying to survive. And under those circumstances, we from time to time heard gunshots in the woods because somebody was getting a moose or they were sighting their rifle. But back then, you might have had one or two people per square mile within a township, as if there were townships then. And what we have found in the interim 50 years is that clearly the numbers of people have grown. Uses that historically were pretty much accepted have no longer a place in recreation by virtue of the damage that we've found they cause. So to that end, what I would like to say is that what I have watched in the Pinnock River Valley over the last 25 years that I've lived out here has been a steady degradation both in the wildlife and in the kinds of activities that people are engaging in. A few years ago, we made our last horseback trip out to Pinnock Glacier because by then, shooting and the trash and the trail destruction, while always having been annoying and a real drag, had got to the point where we were no longer comfortable about our safety or the safety of our animals. Trails that we have used for that long, which were maintained naturally and with little effort on our part, have since been discovered and very much destroyed by ATVs. We, on horseback, can't ride in a trail that an ATV has made because the horses are inclined to go spread-legged and they freeze up, they're frightened to death, you can't ride them. So that's one issue. The second is the rampant shooting, which this bill pretty much condemned by saying, in essence, that it's going to take extraordinary circumstances to get target shooting everywhere or anywhere curtailed. So it sanctions that. There are four things about this bill that really bother me. First and foremost, it precludes effective law enforcement by requiring, in essence, a single person, as has been stated, a aren't attended by ATV enthusiasts. We like to go fast, we like to drink, and we like to pack weapons. All of those things come together, and they don't make for a good showing for someone who has to be out there trying to counsel these folks about their behavior. Second is the grandfathering of the trails issue. I understand, I believe that was just tossed in there so that when it was so obvious it was outrageous it would get tossed, that the Stoltz-Huggins Alliance would simply say, look, we made a concession here, what do you people want? What we really want is a special recreation area with all the attendant protections under statute other than that under which this bill is being forwarded. We strongly support education of law enforcement there, and we hope that anyone who fails to provide that will receive the sanctions of their peers there in the legislature. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Are there questions of Mr. Nelson? Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Next, we'll go to Matsu to Ken Barber. And I'm going to have to start enforcing the minute-and-a-half time limit because some people have gone over a little bit. They've been pretty good about it, but we do need to get the testimony on this. And I do want to, as Chairman, say one thing. Somebody commented about the lack of time, and I think that comment was a little premature because we're not going to take just 5 minutes of testimony. We're probably going to wind up taking 45 minutes to an hour testimony on this bill. If you've got a complaint about time, please take it elsewhere, not to my committee. Ken Barber.
Yeah, my name is Kenny Barber. I'm a longtime resident of the area. I trap and I hunt out there. The reason that I support this bill for motorized use is that, well, we got the Chugach State Park on one side, and we got the Homer Hay Flats on the other end, and we also have Hazard Pass recreational area. And you know, I sit here listening to people complain about motorized use or non-motorized use, but up to you what? There's not a spot paint that I know of that is designated for motorized use. But I think the Connect River spot should be very well put. Coverage should be there. I think that's a good place to have it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barber. Thank you for being brief. Next is Patty Barber.
Hello, my name is Patty Barber, and I live in the Butte area. I would like to thank Representative Colton Stoltz and Senator Charlie Huggins for all their time and efforts to create the public use area. My right to use a motorized vehicle in a favorite recreational area has become harder through the years with its Chugach State Park, Palmer Hay Flats, and Hatcher Pass recreational area, eliminating or restricting our rights to use motorized vehicles. The non-motorized public has not lost any rights to use any of these popular recreation areas. That is fact, so the Connect River public use area should be kept open for all forms of motorized vehicle use. Pictures circulated about the crops with abandoned and burned out cars are close to exaggerated. Every year, the Alaska ATV Club has conducted a cleanup in the spring and fall to eliminate this problem. As for pictures of the damage to the trail, those pictures were taken during the spring breakup and are not in the same condition when the ground dries up. Litter on the river bar is enforceable, and a periodical presence by a state trooper or other member of a law agency would help decrease this misuse. Many states have set aside areas for motorized use. It's time Alaska has a plan to protect motorized access to public lands. I want to thank the Senate Resource Committee for allowing me to speak today.
Thank you very much, Patty, for their questions. I'd like the record to reflect that we've been joined by Senator Stevens. Next testifier, Bill Folsom.
Yes, I'll be brief. I've testified before in favor of this bill, and I am again. I came here in the 60s, and then we've been gradually losing access ever since I've been here, and right now we're just trying to maintain an access area, and I appreciate all the effort that's gone into this, and I hope that it goes forward as it is. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Folsom. Any questions? Next, Pete Probasco. Good afternoon, Pete.
Good afternoon. I'd like to also thank Representative Bill Stoltz and Senator Charlie Huggins
for their leadership on this bill. I think it's a very well-written bill. It provides the needed management for this area. It does not provide for a lockup, which I think many people are looking for. I think it gives the authority to manage it for multiple use, and I can retain the access, and I think that's very important. And I strongly support the passage of this bill.
Thank you, Pete. You still working?
I hunt.
Okay. That was my question. I just wonder if you still work for the Extension Center. Let's Senator Wagner talk.
Well, over 20 years.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, me too. next is Eugene Cassie.
Yeah, thank you for this opportunity to speak to you. I'm a longtime resident of the greater Anchorage area of borough/municipality of Anchorage over 30 years. I've recreated up in the Kinnick River Valley for all that time. I've seen many, many areas in the municipality of Anchorage closed to motorized recreation, and I'd like to see this bill supported. I support it, and I can see with the fantastically increased transportation costs that people are not going to be able to transport their vehicles and themselves clear to Glen Allen or Polk as it did in the past. Those costs are getting too high. This is a place that a lot of the largest population center of Anchorage can use. It's close by. It does need some regulation. I can understand the residents of the area being concerned about discriminant use of firearms, but I think that can be addressed. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Are there any questions? Next is Steve Cassie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. He doesn't wish to speak at this time.
All right. We'll go on to Gene Woods.
Thank you for this opportunity to testify in favor of HB 307. Charlie Huggins and Bill Stokes have worked with the community. Although I'm not a member of the Butte Community Council, I would like to go on record as saying they took a vote there on this bill, and they voted 74-1 in support of this bill. I first accessed this area in 1954 and can no longer use it on foot because of my age and health problems, and there needs to be a place for those that are older that still want to enjoy the outdoors to be able to recreate, and this is a logical area for that, and I would appreciate support for this bill. Thank you.
Any questions of Ms. Woods? Thank you very much for taking the time to testify today, Gene. Next is Jim Pelletier.
Hi, my name is Jim Pelletier, and I work at House Bill 307 because I do about all the same. I have both a four-wheeler snow machine, and I use this area. And as far as I know, I have not abused this area in any way, and I think it should stay usable for everyone who wants to use it. So I definitely support this House Bill. Thank you.
Thank you for testimony. Some great questions. Next is Randy Owens. Go ahead. Randy Owens on.
I'm on, I guess.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I'm a resident of the area. I have hunted and fished and trapped this area for many years. I've enjoyed many of the benefits of being in this area. I've trapped there since in the 60s. We need an area where people can go and play. It's you can go out there any day of the week and see people riding their four-wheelers, and it's largely an area of sand and gravel, and that's where they ride, and they have good time, and there is a problem with some garbage and things that occurs from time to time, but the people in the area are pretty good about keeping it cleaned up. We're anxious and ready to engage any problems of this nature that turn up. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak to you. I also want to say this is a very important area for recreation for the not only local people, but for many of the military guys come out there and get a place to go on the weekends and get a place, a chance to write, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Randy, for testifying. Any questions? Senator Stephan?
Mr. Chairman, I have another meeting I'm going
to. Oh, okay. Next, we go to Patrick O'Connor.
Yes, Patrick O'Connor. I've spent most of my life in the area. Sure, I was a youngster, the backpack, going through that country. 6 years later, just a little proper travel around with a backpack, walking, and I use a four-wheeler snow machine. I've been doing it for quite a few years back there. I fully support this bill, and I think the area needs this kind of recreation because of the cost of traveling to other parts of Alaska to get to these things. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. O'Connell. Any questions? Next, Joe Mellon.
Joe Moline.
Oh, Joe Moline? Okay.
Yeah. Well, I've been fish vector for, you know, 20 years or more, and seeing that, you know, I'm in a wheelchair, it's a lot easier to get around in four-wheelers, so I support the bill because of that reason. And I'd just like to keep that area open. Thanks.
How do you spell your last name, Joe?
M-E-L-I-N.
Okay. Thank you for the testimony. Appreciate it. Next is Tom Domeyer.
Status victim.
Hello?
I live in this area since 74. I hiked, canoed, dog mushed, and four-wheeled in the Connecticut River since that time. And I wholeheartedly support this bill. I do believe that something seems to be done, needs to be done with the garbage in that area. And if there's ever a need for somebody to volunteer and patrol this area for whatever reason, I sure would volunteer. Thank you.
We'll keep a record of that. Not very often we get somebody to volunteer to help with something. Thank you very much, Tom. Next is Virginia Blaine.
Hi, I'm Virginia Blaine, and I'm a resident of the South Snake River area. And I'm very concerned with what passage of this bill as written will mean for our area. In spite of the many people who have written, called, emailed, held meetings trying to get your attention in this, I do not feel you have shown any concern for our voices. We need real law enforcement in this area to park the rest and patrol the area to see rules are being obeyed. One unarmed officer will not do this. We need sanitary facilities, restrooms, and trash bins. We have a real problem with dumping and car burning and shooting across rivers for resident homes, not to mention the noise from this shooting and explosives. More money needs to be allocated for the area. The Snake Glacier could be the next tourist attraction. It has capabilities as a campground, hiking trail, canoeing, as well as motorized activity. Families would use this area if they could feel safe. Right now, no one feels safe because of the lack of concern by law enforcement and the lack of respect by users of the area. Neighboring homes have trespassers coming across their property and all ours, some drunk and disorderly. I cannot understand why you, as our representatives, seem not to hear or understand what the passage of this bill will mean. What is your vision of this? What is your future vision of this area? More trash, more polluted water and land, less vegetation, fewer animals, runs, salmon streams, bullets flying everywhere, someone is injured or killed. Ransacked cars, parking lot, highway scared to go there because it is not safe. A beautiful area ruined because you, our representative, did not try to envision a better ending. I hope not. Thank you.
I've got a question, Ms. Blaine. Don't you think, with the establishment of this as a public use area, the things that you just discussed and talked about that are lacking right now will come with this designation? And isn't this the start of completing some of these things?
I don't read that into it. I don't see enough teeth in the way it's written now. One unarmed officer on 24/7 duty cannot patrol that area. It's too huge. We don't have our law enforcement now. We're at the bottom of the list.
I don't see restrooms, the sanitary facilities, and the trash problem being addressed. Maybe you have that in future plans, but I think it would be a long way down the road. And I have not proposed ATV or four-wheelers for there.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that. Thank you for testifying. Next is Gary Dorsey.
My name is Gary Dorsey. I live in the Snake River area, and my two complaints that I hear have all been valid, with the exception of I have not seen that the people that are for this bill have not seen where their access has been limited. If anything, there might be additional roads to put through or better ones. I own an ATV. I've never heard anyone talk about reducing the use of them, just the wildness of them. I myself am not afraid of going in bear country, moose country, wolf country, anything else, but I do not went to that act into this area without carrying a gun for my own protection against people that shoot at me. I will shoot back. And that's not the kind of place I want to take my better half, my family, anybody. No relatives, I won't go there. It really is a dangerous area. Now, here's the thing. Portage Glacier, for example, is losing its value as a tourist attraction. My vision is one for the future. This is a beautiful area. It can be a useful area for all of the pretty user groups that have been mentioned. And I'd like to be able to use my ATV. I don't want to go through the salmon streams or anything else that would endanger, say, moose calving. And I feel that can do this with responsible use. What I would like to see is less, what I've seen in this bill is partisanship. And I would like to see the senators, certainly the like statesmen, use non-partisanship and do it with integrity. Thank you.
Any questions of Mr. Dorsey?
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next to testify is Noelle Woods.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Also, this person testify at this time.
Okay. Next, we'll go to Stanley Carter.
Yes, this is Stanley Carter, and I was in the community council for about 8 years, and I was president for a couple of years. And it's my consensus of this bill that 75% of people here wanted left open, and it's a good bill. That's about all I can say. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Charlotte Sartor.
I'm Charlotte Carter. I lived in the area and been a non-motorized user there for since 1971. I want to thank Representative Stokes for the changes that have made this much better bill than the original. I would suggest some rewording of the incompatible use section, which helps make sure both residents' concerns and access are addressed. Residents need to be assured of involvement regarding quality of life, choose and trail planning, sanitation, safety, or the users want to be assured access. Section D, center page 3, line 13, I suggest that it has compatible with purchases and in collaboration with all user groups and area residents, Minister Chell, and continue recognize this non-ferry motor vehicle trails and access those trails provide the accommodation that will provide the least shortest possible substitute tactical route. Continue to avoid critical habitat that fail rehabilitation and maintenance in a way that minimizes damage and enhance the motor vehicle and add non-motorized. Continue options and opportunities to connect to our public use area. Delete provide for increased use public use area. All use in the area needs to be compatible with purposes. Trails need to be evaluated, not grandfathered in. The increased problems in the area are due to increased use. Rather than cost and increased use, the facilities provide management of all uses. I hope the bill will address problems and ensure adequate enforcement and funding for enforcement.
like, when I was growing the area. It's a wonderful place. Standing on a mountain, pretty canoeing, close to a large population, wonderful bird life, good management is long overdue. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you very much, Charlotte. Cecilia Fritz?
Am I on?
Yes.
Yes, hi, thank you very much. I'm Stephanie Chris, Chair of the Connecticut River Watershed Group. My comments relate to, direct to item D, page 3, line 13. Our group believes that all use should be compatible with the outlined purposes in section 4123.180 to ensure protection of habitat and consider interests of all users. Residents are concerned that existing wording completely disregards their quality of life concerns and their desire to be involved in trail planning and the adjoining high-use public area. ORV users are concerned they will lose access and opportunity as a result of planning. We believe that with the following amendment to item D2, page 3, line 13, it will clearly address all of these fears. Please amend item D2 as follows. Begin the sentence with, as compatible with purposes identified in 41.23.180 and in collaboration with all user groups and area residents, the commissioner shall, and then continue on to finish out the existing wording. Thank you, committee, and thank you, Senator Huggins and Representative Silk, especially for your work on improving this bill. We sincerely appreciate it, but we should give a little more attention to some amending to help alleviate residents' fears and make them be a part of this planning effort. Thank you.
Cecilia, just so you know, I am aware that you called my office and asked to have an amendment done to this bill, and I think you were told that the bill goes to finance next, and it will be in the hands of Lida Green, who is a resident of that area, and I'm sure if the amendment is acceptable to Senator Huggins, he will discuss it with Senator Green and maybe be able to accommodate your wishes. Senator
Elton. Thanks, Mr. Chair. And Cecily, I've seen the amendment also. I guess the question I have for you, because, I mean, I was impressed by the letters that you have submitted also. The question I have for you is, my understanding of the process, as explained by DNR, is that there is going to be a public comment period, there's going to be a public survey, there is going to be a plan drafted by DNR, and then they're going to take that plan back out for additional public comment. And so, I mean, my understanding is that the concern that you're expressing through the proposed amendment, I mean, is dealt with at two or three stages in a process that DNR has said could take about 2 years. Just your reaction to what I've just said.
We find this wording is somewhat ambiguous as to how much flexibility managers really will have to address a high-use area. And there's nothing in this bill that says anything about, you know, definitely making sure that the residents are involved in a planning effort. There's still people that view this wording, and I'm one of them, as more or less giveaway that they're trying to find a way to grandfather trails with this change of wording so it's not so obvious. Well, you know, some of the people for the Citizens Advisory Board, something that's very dedicated and specific to including residents. This strikes at the very core of their daily life, what they experience there. And if we can improve the wording, I think they'll end up getting a lot more support for the bill and less opposition and trying to push for a state recreation area.
Mr. Chair, just a quick response, Cecily, and I appreciate your responding to what I've just outlined. I don't know if it gives you as much comfort as it gives me, but Mr. Milius is with DNR is the one that described that public process, and I can tell you that in my working with the department and specifically with Mr. Milius, I mean, I think if he says that's the way it's going to be, I mean, I think you can kind of take his word to the bank. And so just a comment.
Okay, thank you. I hope so.
Thank you, Ms. Fritz. Next testifies Lynn Woods.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Lynn Woods. I represent the residents of the Snake River Valley on the Madison Borough Assembly. Since the beginning of my term in 2004, I have heard on a regular basis the problems occurring on the land. Residents have asked that we initiate this process and to create a management system that would protect resources that they can continue traditional use, such as hunting, fishing, mining, to provide recreational opportunities for all and find on-ground enforced state laws, management plan, and curb the unsafe shooting and the lawless and the unruly behaviors of state. This led us all these things. There must be sufficient funding assigned to any of the legislation. I recognize that any residents of Alaska, this area, or recreation, it is not beautiful, but I and empathy lie with the rest who live along the valley. And their dreams are real, their peacefulness gone on many days of the year. And I like your with creating this legislation to make sure that their concerns are met. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions of Ms. Wood? Thank you very much for testifying. Hope I get this right. Mylon Marchnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have to do the time, right?
Go ahead.
You have to do the time, right?
You're not coming across very well. See if you can readjust the mic or get closer to it.
This is Judy with SLIO. Mr. Martin has
testified
due to time constraints.
Oh, okay. So, is there anybody else there to testify that hasn't?
Nope, very much.
Okay, thank you very much. Next, we'll go to Anchorage to Eric Unday, Alaska Center for the Environment.
Good afternoon, Senate Resources Committee. My name is Eric D. And I'm here representing Alaska Center for the Environment. Alaska Center for the Environment would like to thank you for the opportunity to comment on HD 307. There are grassroots conservation organizations based in Texas, over 7,000 Alaska members. We've been working 35 years to protect Alaska.
Eric, let me stop you a minute. Try adjusting the mic or get a little closer. You're not coming in very well. You're kind of breaking up.
Yeah, I hear a little feedback in the speaker here. Okay, I'll continue. Our main concerns are with respect to the resource that is the Connect River watershed. For the safety and quality of the little all the uses of the area. As today, we would argue that resource protection, safety, and the high quality of life on the Connect have not been major concerns for the park and natural resources. Throughout South Dakota, Alaska, it is well known that many places where there are no rules, there are no laws, and this is because there's absolutely zero enforcement. As you're well aware from the testimony today, there are numerous personal and sometimes craftsmanship stories of what local residents have to live with. Constant gunfire, explosions, abandoned, stolen cars that are burned and polluted, trash, unprecedented proportion, and oftentimes abuse of OHV misuse. Simply stated, any fear in the area and therefore avoid Connect. We do commend Senator Huggins and Representative Stoltz for attempting to address the problem with the Connect. We are this afternoon to ask the committee to back up the strong enforcement language of HD 307 with a tough, hard nose on the ground enforcement presence. All the way through these hearings for HD 307, enforcement is one issue where there is absolutely no dispute, no disagreement. Everyone believes that tough on-the-ground presence will dramatically improve the out-of-control situation. What's 307's answer to the enforcement of this strong language? One DNR staffer with a citation book. The staffer is not armed, he has no backup, an ineffective solution at best. Dangerous would be the term I would use. The area's problems are too complex and oftentimes too dangerous for one don't get me wrong, one natural resource specialist or DNR assigned to manage the Connect River Public Use Area is needed and welcome. But again, this staff will certainly need help in addressing the serious disuse that is occurring. So in conclusion, for the local residents' peace of mind and the stewardship of this wonderful resource, please consider strong enforcement and what the strong enforcement will add to the public use area.
Any questions? Thank you very much for your testimony. Next, we'll go to Todd Park.
Good afternoon, Senate Resource Committee. This is Todd Park. I'm representing the Alaska House for Access Alliance. It seems to me that the best way of solving a problem is with the people who are actually using that area behind the idea of solving that problem. And that's exactly what HC07 does. It gives the a vehicle to go out and develop the management plan to solve the problems we've heard today. I think perhaps one of the major points of disagreement is whether the plan will actually address those problems. I'm sure the bill sponsor and DNR could elaborate on exactly how the plan will address those problems and deal with all these issues, so I'm not going to waste your time with that today. But there's a point that I'd like to drive home. One is that this bill gets the people who are both using the area behind the idea of solving these problems. The other point is that that area, you can go in almost any direction, just a mile, to find a place that's not surprised. A place managed for no hotels, a place managed for employees, a place managed for watching. There's a state park, there's the former Hayes Labs, and so on. Without this, it's the destination for motorized users. A destination that's actually managed for that, where trails are, where enforcement can be had, where trash can be hauled out, where education can be used to allow those activities to happen. There are many other states that are just for this purpose. Alaska does, include the area that's intended for motorized access, not managed in that way. It's timeshare. The opportunities for motorized use in that area are just none. Most people don't consider that a motorized use destination. The Connect area right now is supporting that. The multi fishing game populations, as somebody mentioned earlier, a fantastic salmon hunt. Most of the users that we represent are out there to experience everything that Alaska has to offer. Whether it's just or most, it's not just the destination to burn gas, it's the destination to experience classes. And we'd like to keep it that in to keep those opportunities down. Thank you for the time.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions, Mr. Clark? Thank you very much for your testimony. That is all the names I have of the people who wish to testify from the public. With that, I want to close the public hearing and their discussion by the committee. Senator Seeker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Excuse me, one more thing. Dick Milius is on online to answer any questions the committee might have of him. Go ahead, Senator Seeker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of questions for the sponsor. I see Senator Huggins is here as well. Under Section 210 on page 3, line 22, when you're talking about enforcement authority, just to step over that, under Title 16, for an example, in Fish and Game, an employee of the department authorized by the commissioner is considered to be a peace officer. Now, as I read this here, an employee of the department, meaning the Department of Natural Resources, authorized by the commissioner, which is the same language we use for peace officer for the Department of Fish and Game, now would be authorized as a peace officer. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Seekins, that is correct. We've looked at the language from Fish and Game specifically, and there is that language amongst other statutes with other departments that utilize that same language.
But that's only for the purposes of this chapter?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And then, basically speaking, if you look at the opinion of the Attorney General that follows the one in Fish and Game, it says it's only that it's, they're not a peace officer under AS, only under AS 011060, and that they only have, acquire the general police officer authority, they don't acquire the general police officer authority to enforce all other state criminal laws, just the regulations in this chapter. Is that, were you intending to restrict it to that?
Through the chair, Senator Seekins, yes, sir. We wanted them to focus on those. If there is a trooper in the area, we do have language that says that the Commissioner of Public Safety shall have the necessary access to do their enforcement. So if he is out there under this statute as a peace officer as determined by 010060, they can also enforce the regulations as well as the general enforcement.
Under the fish and game language, there's a third paragraph that states any other person authorized by the commissioner. Is there a reason why you didn't follow that fish and game model?
Through the chair, Senator Seekins, we worked closely with the Department of Natural Resources and Dick Miles to come up with this language, and this was the language that DNR came forward and said that would best help them do this. I would like to direct that to Mr. Miles, if you would.
Mr. Miles?
Dick, can you answer that question, please?
Yes. Through the chair, Senator Seekins, we actually didn't internally discuss that option. I'm not sure how much fish and game has used that delegation. It might be useful for us to ask them that, but we quite honestly just didn't consider that that option.
Okay. And with that in mind, since this is kind of, there's kind of a joint responsibility for some of the management functions that go on in the area, is there any reason that you wouldn't want a Department of Fish and Game person to also be able to have police powers in terms of enforcing the requirements of the of this chapter? The reason I'm asking that is because that person may be there, someone from DNR may not be there, and would have the opportunity to enforce the restrictions or the purposes of the chapter.
Senator Seekins, for the chair, actually reading through this under number one there, it says that the commissioner could delegate that to an appointed department or other person authorized by the commissioner, so I guess that could include fishing game.
I see. You know, I kind of missed it in that respect because it basically takes into it incorporates paragraph 3 in the fish and game requirements into paragraph subparagraph 1 in this legislation.
Yeah, I just realized that as I read that as well. So.
I missed that. Otherwise, I was going to amend it or propose an amendment. So I'm reasonably satisfied then that if it's there, that it could include a fish and game employee, and that would be established by regulation.
Senator Seekers, to the chair, I presume yes, there would probably have to be a regulation.
Okay. Senator Huggins?
Yes. Charlie Huggins here, Senate District H. If I could, very quickly, Ben described how Bill and I introduced this legislation at the end of last session, and we had an extensive public hearing, people coming in. I read my paper or my name in the paper more often than I like to admit. Some was good, some was bad, but that's just the way it is because we knew this was controversial just based on when you have multiple use. In my estimation, there's a couple, three very important things here. Number one, the fact that this places DNR as a responsible agency, which is the biggest leap forward in potential. The difficulty that most people have and can accept is that this is multiple year proposition to put into place the framework to make it work. They expect to hear language about having green outdoor toilets there and a shooting, all those things, infrastructure things, that for whatever reason they believe that it should be in this basic legislation or alluding to it, and that's not the way it is. You know that. I know that. And that Mr. Malleus and DNR, that's their task over that time frame. There are some safeguards, and this is a stepped process. And, you know, quite frankly, there are some that see this as the glass is half empty, and some see it as the glass is half full, but almost everyone accepts that status quo is not acceptable and that having somebody in charge of it is a good thing, and they sort of part ways from there. And some become very unreasonable, and others are a little more reasonable, but it can be contentious, but I am very, very optimistic. All these people that have spoke here today have become my friends. I've met them so often and at different meetings, and I respect them. We may have difference of opinion, but I respect them, and I pledge to continue to work with them. Of course, Ben knows them better than I. He may go have dinner with most of them every once in a while. He's met with them so much. But with that, I say thank you very much for everything you're doing for us on behalf of our community.
Senator Elton.
Thanks. Dick, are you still on the line?
Yes, Senator Elton.
Okay. I mean, one of the things that struck me was all the talk about enforcement. And I want to go to page 2 of the bill, beginning on line 10, where you're directed, or your department is directed, to develop a plan that includes provision for the enforcement of the plan in compliance with the requirements of the plan. And I guess I'm just asking this for the record. Your fiscal note that talks about the contemplated DNR, the new DNR person that would be in a management position, that doesn't restrict you from developing a plan that would call for additional personnel, especially enforcement personnel, does it?
Senator Altucher, you're correct. We're looking at the bill and our fiscal note actually funds the planning effort and then funds full-time one person who would be dedicated to this area. And we recognize that some of the issues that are problems out there are things that, you know, one unarmed person is not going to deal with. There are issues that troopers and so on need to deal with. But we didn't try to address that in this bill or in this fiscal note. We were just looking at what sort of staffing DNR feels it needs to actually start doing the planning and get some on-the-ground presence out there. Like I say, we recognize there's a lot of other things that need to be done, but as many folks have said, this is to get the ball rolling and to better identify what the problems are and more significantly, through the planning, identify what some of the potential solutions are, and that could involve more enforcement by other folks and such.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, I'm satisfied with my answer, and Mr. Chairman, I'd move CS for House Bill 307 from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Is there any objection? Seeing none, the bill will move to the next committee. I'd just like to say on record, though, it looks to me as reading this bill, this is really a work in progress.
Yes.
And it should just do nothing but get better.
Absolutely.
And Mr. Chairman, it's exactly the same problem I run into when we talk about opening the Denali Highway.
85.
You betcha. Everybody wants it in place before we start. We got to start somewhere.
Thank you.
I got Elkins and Thomas. They're selling out.
You're still in there.
That's all right.
You know.